The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning. Welcome back to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. And happy to have joining us from L.A. right now is Robert, a fellow gambler in recovery. Robert, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, and good morning to you. I'm really glad to be here. I appreciate what you do.
Thank you. So when was the last time you wagered?
My last bet, and more importantly, my last lie about making a bet, was May 22nd of 2009.
Okay.
Which is 5,571 days ago.
Wow. Well, congratulations on that. It's a great accomplishment and very proud of you for doing it. 15 years without gambling. But let's hear your story. How old were you when you first started gambling?
You know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. Actually, my first wager was on Hanukkah with my brothers and sisters on a dreidel. You know, we used to spin that dreidel for chocolate coins. And I remember that wasn't enough, and that was 8 days of Hanukkah. And then in January, I'm going, hey, we break into our piggy banks. We could play a dreidel for nickels, dimes, and quarters. And I distinctly remember that I wanted to play all the time.
And how old were you?
I was like 7 or 8. You know, I was just a kid. And then,
yeah.
You know, and then fast forward, we went to visit my aunt who lived in Maryland, and the family packed in the car. We went down there. We went someplace on the Chesapeake Bay, and they had slot machines. I think I was 10 years old, and they gave me a Dixie cup with some nickels in it, and we were going down there for some soft-shell crabs or whatever. Anyway, when my nickels ran out, I threw a fit, really threw a fit, and they had to, you know, spinning around those old slot machines with plums and cherries and lemons or whatever. And they had to carry me out to the car, and I didn't have dinner. I was crying and screaming when those nickels ran out. I distinctly remember that as a 10-year-old kid.
Wow.
Seeing those slot machines.
When you look back on your life, obviously, with clarity now, as a gambler in recovery for 15 years, that was your introduction to gambling, although you probably didn't know it was gambling at that point in your life. When did gambling become a significant part of your life?
Well, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I'm 74, by the way. This was in 1964. I got my first job after school working in a drugstore. The minimum wage was $1.65 an hour, and I worked for 4 hours after school so he could make $7 or $8. And there was an older kid there, the delivery boy, his name was Curly, and he said, hey, we could bet on you, Robert. I could hook you up to you. Could bet on a football game. You could bet $25 on a football game. It takes 3 hours, or you could work 20 hours to make that $25. And that really sounded good. And that was my first. At 14 years old, I had a bookie in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and I started betting football at that age. You know.
Did you quit your job?
No, I was still in high school, you know. I was only making $1.65 an hour.
Right.
It was an after-school thing. But I was just a kid, and that was really the beginning. And then the bets got bigger. And as I got older, the bets got bigger, you know. And I got really lucky in the beginning. You know, I won a couple bets, and I thought this was it, you know. And just the analogy of making $1.65 an hour, you know, working 30 hours, to make $25 or $30, or I could, you know, put it on Penn State and I could be done by 4 o'clock, you know?
No, I get it. I get the rationale of it completely. It's quote unquote easy money, and sit there, watch a football game, make more money than you could earn at any job at that point. So that takes you into your teen years. Were you very quickly an all in gambler, or did it take you time to kind of graduate to something you enjoy doing, you like doing, to where it became a bigger part of your life?
You know, it actually became a bigger part of my life because, you know, when you're not gambling, you're thinking about gambling.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was always there, and that was the option. I never really examined the consequences, but it got pretty, pretty ugly pretty fast.
Well, you know, walk me through that. What do you mean by that?
No, I went away to college, and, you know, I was no longer, you know, at home under the wraps of my parents. And I had the freedom to fly, And it was, for me, it was like, you know, in college, meeting kids from around the country in the dorms and, you know, being a big shot and just being a big shot. And the wages got better. And then I got in trouble financially, deeply in trouble financially. And I, you know, my dad worked his ass off. He was a great guy. And he was not a gambler. And he paid my tuition, my books, my room, my apartment. He paid everything. And all he wanted to do was get his four kids through college. Well, I found out I could borrow $17,000 a year from the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, a scholarship on my own with my signature. And in my sophomore, junior, and senior years, I borrowed $17,000. When I graduated, I owed the state of Pennsylvania $51,000. And when my dad found out, he was absolutely devastated. Devastated. All that money went to gambling and a high lifestyle and being a big shot and picking up checks and yada, yada, yada. So you know where that takes you.
Yeah, it takes you down a bad road that's very hard to get out of because you're not making enough money to pay it back. Your dad didn't have the money to pay it back, and then you get yourself in a bad spot. Give me an idea, at the height of your gambling, what a day would look like for you.
You know, listen, once again, I'm old school, man, before cell phones and all that kind of stuff. And there was a thing I think called the JK Sports Journal. It was like a weekly magazine that had all the schedules. And then you would get the lines and, you know, I'd study the lines and then make those decisions. And as soon as I saw 3.5, I knew the winner, you know?
Right.
And there was just no stopping me. It was, and I went to school. I'm in college, but I didn't spend that much time studying. I was just thinking about games, and then there were poker games at night, and on and on and on. But
so let me stop you there. What did you, outside of, you know, the loan you got for college that you used on gambling, there had to be moments when you had no money. What did you do to fund the gambling when you didn't have any money?
Well, you know, I'm pretty good at manipulating people, and I'm pretty good at convincing people. I'm a salesman, by the way, and I was able to, you know, sell my way into, you know, a lot. I was such a jerk, Craig. I had, you know, I would evaluate people I met. I had this theory: you were either an R or a not, meaning you are somebody I might be able to get some money of, or you're not, and then that's how I would invest in my friendship with you. Thinking along the lines, my plot all the way was that this guy will lend me a grand or this guy will do that, you know? Yeah.
So basically for you, every relationship became transactional.
Exactly, exactly. And then every relationship was transactional.
Before I get to the bottom of the Bauer moment that you experienced in your life, along the way, did anybody ever come to you, a wife, a buddy, a relative, and say, hey, Robert, what's going on? You're not acting normal?
It was more importantly like, hey, Robert, can't you keep your word? These are my friends. Hey, be here at 7:30. Why can't you be here at 7:30? Or, you know, and just the big shot-ism. So that was really, you know, I did have some really, really close friends who I'm really still close with that I've had an opportunity to make amends with since I got into this program. But, you know, once again, I was hard to read. I couldn't even read myself.
And what was, for you, the kind of come-to-Jesus moment? What was that last time you made that wager or told that lie, if you don't mind sharing that moment, that led you to finally acknowledge, hey, man, I need some help? What was that day and moment like? What happened?
Well, I want to tell you that I was in serious over $1 million in debt. I had 27 credit cards, and I had consolidated loans, and I had convinced employers to, you know, get a fifth cosign and note for me so I could pay off my credit cards, and I'd get the note and I didn't pay them off. I was buried. I mean, buried. And I remember distinctly, I got into horse racing because, you know, to me, you could bet 100 on a football game and you win 100, leave 100 into a race, into a horse race. And you could win, you know, 10,000 or whatever, you know, right. So horses really are what brought me down. But I was at Del Mar Racetrack, and, I won a lot of money in the seventh, eighth, and ninth race. And I remember, you know, how these guys follow you out to your car. I had that security guard. I had about maybe $35,000 or $40,000 in a shoebox. And I remember getting home, driving back to L.A., and it wasn't enough. I was devastated. I was freaking out. I owed my landlord 3 months of my car. I mean, on and on and on. It was not enough. And as the light went on, I'm like, what will be enough? The only way for me to continued action, I had to continue. So, look, Greg, I was a very successful failure, okay? I made the minimum payments to all these guys. I owed Citibank, you know, $80,000. They say, send us $420, you know? Sure. And then you make your payments every month for a year, and all of a sudden, hey, man, we're going to increase your credit line $10,000. Well, the only way out for me was to keep swinging. You know, I was never, how the hell was I going to pay back $1 million on plastic and banks and yada, yada, yada. So it was keep swinging. I finally realized I can't, you know, it was not enough. I had this big box of money and it was just not enough. And I was actually meditating at the time. And this really cool teacher that I had said, you know, Robert, you're a compulsive gambler. You have nothing and you love gambling and you have nothing. You got to go to GA. And said, just get yourself to a GA meeting. He said, don't become a senator or a congressman. Just go in and get your work done. But I fell in love with GA bright and early, and I am a senator. I am a congressman. And by the way, I had 13 years. When I told you in the beginning, it's been such amount of time since I lied about a bet. I was in the room, and I gambled after 12 years. I gambled. I went to China, to Macau, and I gambled. Then I came back to Vegas, and I won two huge jackpots, and like an idiot, I used my real name and address on those forms you have to sign. And that was the luckiest day of my life when those came to the house. I was at a concert, and my wife called me up, and I'd been married for 4 years, and she knew I'm in GA. And she said, Robert, are you gambling? I said, are you kidding me? What do you mean, am I gambling? And she had in her hand those two W-9s from the Mirage Hotel. Right. I was busted flat, thank God, May 22nd, 2009. And I was able to, you know, the incomprehensible demoralization of going into that room and looking at guys that love me who I've been hanging with for all these years since August of 93. And here's 2009. And I go, guys, you know, I lied. It was a cancer. And I wasn't really hiding credit cards or stealing. I just went into the casino and I gambled once or twice. I've been to the racetrack since, I don't even remember when, but that's what happened to me, Greg. You know, the whip came down, and I call that the luckiest day of my life. And I faced up to the fact that, guys, I've been in this room going out for fellowship and yada, 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 but I had gambled, and it was a cancer. It was killing me, you know. Well, so
let me stop you there. I want to get to the good stuff and how life changed for the better in just a moment. We're joined with Robert out in Los Angeles. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Robert joins us for a few more moments here. So it's funny, you're a rare story in that you stopped gambling after a win, not after a loss, the way many people do, or getting in trouble, or the police coming knocking on your door, or a spouse, you know, checking out, you know, a bank statement and not understanding where all the money's going. Your wife caught you after a win, but to her, I'm sure it was a betrayal of trust as a spouse, that she knew you were in GA, she knew you were a gambling addict, and behind her back, you were gambling. So I assume you got the ultimatum, I'm out the door if you don't stop, something along those lines. Am I right on that?
Yeah, pretty much, you know. But, you know, we immediately called my sponsor, the most beautiful man I ever met in my life, you know, my sponsor, Dave. And, he came to the house. It was really a quick intervention. And, you know, we sat down and it was explained to me, it doesn't matter if your wife trusts you. It matters if you trust you.
Right.
You know? And that was the advice I was given. And I said, you know, maybe my wife will never forgive me, although she has. But there's always going to be in the back of her mind the doubt. You know, we have incredible children. We have incredible kids. My kids are grown up now, and they have no interest in gambling. They're very successful.
And do they know your story or no?
100%. They've been to my birthdays, and my son is the coolest kid, and he loves it. And, you know, I was present for him. I heard it a long time ago, 4 years before I was married, this guy Larry B. from New York at a conference said, thanks to GA, my kids have a shot.
Before I let you go, Yeah, and I love the fact you reached out and you're sharing your story. I hope you continue to do it. There are a lot of people listening who are at their wit's end, who are at the very beginning of recognizing, hey, it's either me or a loved one, you know, needs help, needs to get into recovery, has a gambling problem. What advice do you give that person or their loved ones who are at step one of this process?
You know, I have a real issue with a couple of things, Craig, and one of them is, you know, the principles of Gamblers Anonymous. Step 11 is our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. That was pretty good back in 1957, but we have to do a better job promoting there is a solution. And I talk about a solution because I've seen all the evidence on the planet. Guys worse than me. Thank God I never went to jail, you know, but I belonged in jail, by the way. But I talk about the solution. Newcomers come in. You know, the methods have changed. You know, there was no cell phones when I was in the swing and things in the early days. The methods have changed, but the result is exactly the same. You know,
yeah.
We're putting money down. We're putting money knowing we know what's going to happen before it happens, with no regard to the consequences. So I have these young kids. There's a strong freshman class in GA. I'm so proud of these kids making service commitments. And, you know, I became one of the old guys that was here for me.
Right.
I always say, I stood in my first GA meeting after listening for about 40 minutes, and I stood up and I said, yeah, I'm Robert G. I'm a liar. I'm a cheat. I'm a thief. And I got a standing ovation. That's the only place on the planet where you're going to get a standing O when you say, I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. And I love this thing. Thank God my children are who they are and became who they are. They don't have to lie or cheat or steal.
Do you miss gambling at all?
I love sports, man. I went to Penn State. I bet Penn State if they were playing the Steelers, I'd bet Penn State. Yeah. But sports are incredible now because I could walk away on a double overtime, you know, with 4 seconds to go. I don't give a crap what happens.
Right.
And I'm really fortunate. We encourage like newcomers, maybe you should stay away from the game for a while. But I love sports and when they don't mean anything, wins or losses mean nothing to me.
Well, listen,
it's exciting.
I can't thank you enough for reaching out and sharing your story. And I'm glad that you're paying it forward and going to GA and counseling your younger people. And I hope you continue to do it. And I'm proud of you. And I love hearing your story and I love hearing the redemption that you've got to experience in your lifetime. And the fact that you now get to live through your kids' successes, which is not guaranteed when you're a compulsive gambler. Many people, unfortunately, you'll lose their families because of their compulsion to gamble. So the fact that you've kept your family together, seems like you've raised really good kids and you get to experience their lives. It makes me feel good and I'm warm on the inside hearing your story. And I can't thank you enough for sharing it today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Before we get out of here today, I wanted to bring a friend of the show on, Ryan, who joined us last year. Regarding a company called Fish and his amazing app called Hey. And the reason I want to bring Ryan back is because September is Suicide Prevention Month. And unfortunately, gambling addicts have the highest rate of suicide amongst all addictions. And I think what Ryan's doing with his family and friends is really amazing. Ryan, good morning. How you doing today, pal?
Very good, Craig. Thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's talk about Fish first. Tell everybody what it stands for, what the acronym is.
Sure. FISH stands for Faith, Integrity, Strength, and Honor, and it's really intended to bring awareness to people struggling with mental and emotional health and isolation issues, and all the clothes that we sell, all the proceeds go to support organizations that help foster and promote those benefits, and also to support the Hay Act,
yep.
Which is really what we focus on.
And by the way, I can speak for a second because I have a bunch of the sweatshirts. They're badass hoodies. And also, you know, the money all goes to this amazing cause that's important. You know, you talked about the Hey app, which I have experienced as well. And it's an opportunity. It's kind of peer-to-peer help for people that might be feeling a certain way, you know, and feel alone and by themselves, that there are resources out there to help people get through what might be a bad day, a bad night, et cetera. Before you walk through the Hey app, if you don't mind sharing why this initiative is so important to you and your family.
Sure. I lost my coach and mentor to suicide in 2010, Coach Brian Maynard Welsh. And then several years later, I lost a fraternity brother, and then 2 years ago lost one of my best friends. And we kind of felt that there was a need to try and do something to further awareness of the mental health issue and the stigma associated with discussing it. And clothing was just one way that we could do as a means to people could wear it and be ambassadors to promote that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to keep going. It's okay to focus on, you know, the things we need to accomplish to be positive in our lives. So that was really the inspiration, was to try and do something positive from the coming from the negative experiences sure. that I personally had.
So the app is called Hey. It's got two Y's. So it's H-E-Y-Y. You can download it on Android or iOS, and tell people what the app's purpose is, and if they do download it, what they'll find.
Sure. The biggest thing is that we've wanted to break down the barriers that prohibit people from reaching out to someone or anyone. And the app is absolutely free. There are no ads. There are no solicitations. And even better, it's anonymous. Nobody needs to know who the other person is. It's simply a mechanism to reach out. When you download the app, you simply input your first name. Don't even need to put your last name, your phone number, your email address. You create whatever username you want. And then if you're having a bad day, or you're really struggling, you simply press the Hey button, and it automatically reaches out to compassionate individuals throughout the United States, and somebody will pick it up and respond. I've personally handled dozens and dozens of communications. My 13-year-old daughter has as well. My 17-year-old daughter has also been a compassionate listener for others that are out there, which is amazing that it goes that young.
Yeah. So ultimately, the purpose of it is, you know, look, and I've been there where you're contemplating not waking up in the morning. So I've lived this, right? And it's a sensitive issue to me. I don't like talking about it a lot, but I can't hide the fact that it is a part of my life story. That when I was out in Whistler, I've told this story a few times, not a lot. You know, and I can't say I wanted to die, but I certainly was going to jump off a ski lift a couple hundred feet down to a mountain. And I know what the end result of that most likely would have been. So it's a sensitive issue for me, having had that experience and having talked to so many gamblers in recovery. And I know the app is not specific towards gamblers. It's towards people who just feel like there's no way out and are desperate to connect with someone that at times will just listen, whether it may not be all for advice, but it's a shoulder to cry on and someone to listen to. So I think it's a very valuable resource that people need to know about. But in the short amount of time the app has been available, has the app reached people that are in that position that I was in and helped them live another day?
It absolutely has, and I'm happy to say that it's worked in that way. I personally have helped a couple people that were in a very bad situation. One in particular, I'll talk briefly about it. They were in West Virginia. They had lost their insurance about a year ago and had been diagnosed with some depression. And they just did not know what to do. And this was their last bastion of hope, and reached out. And, you know, I followed up with that individual, and I'm happy to say that things have gotten more positive for that person. There was another individual who was isolated with COVID and was, you know, in a desperate situation. And we've had a couple of situations where we've been able to get people over to hashtag 988 through the app to get the suicide prevention hotline specialist to help them. So it's been very successful.
And I can tell you again from life experience, if I didn't have my phone with me and I called a dear friend of mine who I actually recently reconnected with, and it was this really amazing emotional moment for me, a young man named Sherrod Williams, who is a dear close personal friend and worked with me in radio in New Jersey. And when I was contemplating jumping off this this chairlift out in Whistler, thank God he answered the phone. And he talked to me until I got to the place where my 2 feet were on the ground, and I didn't jump. And unfortunately, the way life and life circumstances, I didn't speak to him for almost 6 years after that moment. And we just recently reconnected, and it was a very, as you can imagine, emotional moment. But I can speak to the fact that one phone call, one conversation, one person on an app can absolutely save somebody's life. So it's called Hey with two Y's, H-E-Y-Y. You can download it in the App Store. You can also, if you want to, if I'm not mistaken, Ryan, you can sign up to be one of those people that's willing to listen, a compassionate listener, correct?
Absolutely. When you download the app, you simply just indicate, toggle a button that you want to be a listener and be someone that people can reach out to. Right there, one little button.
I think what you're doing is great. I'm all in to help you guys out, as you know, any way I can. I think it's great that you're paying it forward and using, you know, the tragedies that you've experienced in your life to help other families avoid those tragedies. And I hope everybody downloads the app. And if you have someone in your life that you recognize is feeling a certain way, either be there for them yourself or certainly, you know, get them on the app so they can reach out to someone who can listen to them as well. And I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad to be a part of it. And a continued success. And thank you so much for joining us.
Can't thank you enough for everything you've done, Craig. Greatly appreciate it.
Of course. That's Ryan. The company's called Fish. Go check it out. And the app is called Hey, H-E-Y-Y. Please download it. And again, suicide is real. We can't avoid the conversation. We need to have the conversation. And if this is one small step forward in making people more comfortable and willing to have the conversation, then job well done. Appreciate Ryan. Appreciate Robert. Pat Boyle producing today's show. Joe Beningo, I think, is coming up next. And we'll see you again next week right here on Hello, My Name is Craig.